Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
Welcome into the show. And In a theme that, well, this show has kind of leaned into as far as what the Astros are, they're interesting, but they're not good. And last night, you might think, hey, they only scored one run. Taylor Scott comes in there, and in a 10th inning after the Astros couldn't push a run across, he gives up a run on the sac fly as the Astros lose their third in a row to Seattle. What's so interesting about that? Well, the fact that they've now reached seven straight games of scoring and only one inning of those games is interesting because it's now historic. They've tied the expansion era record. Pump those fish, Sean. Let them know.
History, baby.
This team is making history. Seven straight games. Scoring in one inning. That's who they are. They're impotent on offense. They've gotten three quality starts in this series, and they've come up empty as far as wins are concerned. So what felt like maybe a chance to reestablish yourself in the AL West, now you are 6.5 back and trying to avoid the sweep. So Sean and I's predictions, mine was long gone. But Sean's now, he's still alive because he really landed on 4-3. So he's not really alive anymore. But he went back and forth between 4-3 and 3-4 for this road trip. So if we shoot him some bail, if the Astros win tonight or win today, then he can say he's right. Yes.
I'm in the neighborhood.
I clearly overestimated this team, and yeah, that's on me.
You're drinking the orange Kool-Aid.
And I should have realized that beating up on the A's or looking at the A's on the schedule and thinking, you can take 2 out of 3, and then that'll lead to momentum going into the Mariner series was bad reasoning because the Astros are lamb killers. They're 8-1 against the A's and the Rockies this year, dominating the worst teams in baseball. 16-31 against everybody else. 15 games under 500 against teams not named the A's and the Rockies. Yeah, we have a bad baseball team in this town. Everything from decisions that led to the roster as a whole, the roster management on the day-to-day, the injuries, everything comes together to make those numbers stand out. Other numbers that are part of this ugliness, at least in this series, they've beyond the three quality starts that they've gotten, you can't knock what the pitchers have done to keep them in games, and Justin Verlander was the latest. He was great yesterday. He gave up his customary, I'm going to challenge a guy high and miss my spot, and he's going to knock one out of the ballpark. That happens. The Justin Verlander high fastball thing, it's part of the deal. But that was the only run he gave up. A great performance, goes seven, and that's what you want. That's a stopper type of start. Your team is struggling. You need to find a way to gain some momentum. He comes in out there and does everything he can, but the bats didn't do their part. So 18 out of 100 in the series. Two extra base hits, 33 strikeouts, and 4 walks. So if you're watching this series at bat after a bat, and all credit to you, because there is something in this job that says, hey, it's your responsibility to watch the games. Whether you enjoy them or not, you should be watching these games so you can talk about it. For the rest of you who, you know, have other things in your life to be concerned about, if you stayed up to sit through the Astros in Seattle and the impotence on offense, I credit you. I'm not going to give you the same type of credit the people who sat through the 100 lost seasons want. Like, those people always want you to know I was there when things were bad. They're always ushering that Bane quote out to you saying, I was born in the darkness.
All right.
These are what these
You're people, in the League of Shadows.
This right? is what they're saying. This is that's the type of energy
they
we
want
get.
A purple heart.
That's what the, exactly. That's the type of energy we get from them, because they were willing to watch those teams. They can always brush off a disappointing series, or in this at this point a disappointing first 2 months, by saying, "Hey, you don't know how bad it was. I was there during the bad times when we were complaining about bad hot dogs on Dollar Dog Night, where that became a national story. We were there for that. Where were you?" I'm not going to give you credit if you watch this Astro team as compared to what those people want credit for, but you deserve some. It's late. You're tired. You're hoping for a win, and it ends on a sack fly. And it felt inevitable. Taylor Scott, who's been really good, despite the name and how he came to be an Astro because of the spring training, he signed a spring training deal, found his way onto the big club, and has been really good. Wasn't good last night. It was one of a few poor performances for him, but the game ended on a whimper, a sack fly, and that was enough as the Mariners take the first three. So you try to save this road trip and this series with the game today, and you just hope that you don't head home to Minnesota. Head home and to face Minnesota on the backs of a 4-game sweep, and then you're 7.5 games out. And clearly in third place in the division. Sean, it's time for some honesty. We've had discussions on this show about what we would do as far as how many games we would watch. We pretty much said the Friday game, there's a little shot we're going to watch a lot of Friday games. I kind of felt like we came to a conclusion that Friday games are going to be something where we go, you know what, I've watched Monday through Thursday. I might want to do something on a Friday night or maybe just watch a movie. So maybe I don't watch the Astros. Keep track of the score in some ways. I'll know what happens.
Watch the YouTube recap.
Yeah,
the
something
next day.
Like that. Yeah, you'll watch that 8-minute recap from MLB, their YouTube channel. You'll see the biggest plays in the game. That's how you catch up. I can't pretend like we're going to just stop watching games, but we've had to talk about moving them out of the A block, and I'm getting close to that point. Particularly because now we have like Chris Del Conte saying stuff at SEC Media Days that I find interesting. He's coming in hot, challenging the strength of the other rivalry games in the SEC. We'll talk about that. We had Sark talking about rivalries as well. So we have some sound from the Texas contingent at SEC Media Days that we'll get to. But I guess the question is, and anyone else who wants to chime in on this, you can call in 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. If we just decided, you know what, if it wasn't for the job, would we have stopped watching Astro games by now? Like, if for whatever reason the station decided we hate the Astros, we're not watching the games anymore. Or you don't have to anymore. You don't have to talk about them.
A station-wide boycott.
We boycotted the Astros. We're not going to talk about them anymore because they're depressing.
That'd be awesome.
It's a mental health thing for the station not to talk about the Astros anymore. We're not gonna ban you from watching them. You just don't have to talk about them. Would you have stopped watching the Astros?
Definitely. I would have not watched last night.
Yeah.
After they score their one run in what inning was it? Like the fifth? No, the fourth. When they scored their one run in the fourth, I was like, probably not going to win this one. not just because they've only scored in one inning for each of the last now 7 games, but also you just kind of get a feel for
how this game's going to go.
I think I have a pretty good feel for this year's Astros team when things are going to just like, this one, they're going to lose in like a wet fart kind of way.
You start looking at the at-bats and how bad they are and Kirby's mowing them down. You're like, okay, this is there's nothing here.
They're not going to win 1-0.
No,
like they're just not going to win 1-0. Verlander, and I don't think they're going to score. Therefore, they're going to lose.
Yeah, either the Verlander home run will happen, or the bullpen won't yeah, finish the deal.
They're not Bray or Presley.
Yeah, something like that's going to happen. They're not going to win 1-0. So, yeah.
And then once they get to extra innings, like, oh great, The Astros get to start in, with a running runner in scoring position. Sure that will go well. Didn't even advance.
Didn't even get the guy to third.
And then the Mariners on the like maybe the first pitch of the inning.
Yeah.
Ground out to the second baseman, runner advances, and I'm just pointing at my TV, being like, see how easy that is?
Good
to
old
do that?
Productive out on the in the first couple pitches, if not the first pitch. One of those productive outs. Haven't you heard of that before?
I'm not Mr. Small Ball here.
But in the top of the 10th inning.
Yeah, that would Small ball is better than what the Astros are trying to do.
Particularly how they've hit the baseball.
Yeah, they need tiny ball.
Sacrifice bunt.
Micro ball. This team needs small ball.
Give up an out to pick up a base at this point with this team. You're probably not going to hold the Mariners down, so you need to pick up a run here. Yeah. They didn't do that. We saw what happened. They go down 2-1, and the Mariners take the first three. I think I'm there with you. If it was like for the station's mental health, we don't watch the Astros anymore, or we don't talk about them anymore, I'd probably be down to like two games a week just to know what's happening.
I
want to watch Blanco pitch. That's my guy.
Yeah, you got it. You got to be locked in on Blanco. I think I would go into it as I would watch this series. And then after the sixth inning of last night, I was stopped watching. But just because it's like, oh, this is a big, big series. I would get into big series. And then if it's a little series, like the A's series prior to this one.
Sure.
It helped that it was on, like you mentioned, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then I knew I had Monday off. So
yeah.
It was very easy to not tune into those games. And guess what? I had a great weekend.
Yeah. The Astros are bad for sports mental health. I'm not saying actual mental health issues, but for sports mental health, because you look at Astros Twitter and it's everyone very down, sometimes just referencing the good old days, talking about this team is clearly not what those teams were, and it's crazy because it's the same players are just not performing like they used to, and then it's a lot of Espada this, Bagwell this, Crane this.
Why isn't Dubon in the lineup?
All of these things. The Astros are bad for sports mental health in this town.
Yeah, well, because, I think once we get to, maybe it won't be on this day in Astros history, or once we get to, man, remember this, and it's just like a Marwin Gonzalez home run in like a regular season game. That's when you know, like, oh man, this team is cooked. When Astros Twitter turns into like full on remember the good old days, man. You know who I miss right now? Charlie Morton. That's what it's bad.
Hank Conger.
Oh yeah, if they start, Colby Rasmus. Yeah. Once the TikTok sizzle reel edit of Colby Rasmus drops, that's when you know. Evan Gattis, that's when you know. This team is officially, maybe not officially, but in the hearts and minds of the fans, have been eliminated from postseason contention.
When the Astros content creators stop creating content about this season.
Year. When they're stop being angry about year. And
they stop yelling about this year over on Twitter and just start reliving the good old days, you know the Astros are cooked if they're not already. They are
Luis Valbuena.
Oh yeah, bat flip. Love bat flip, but it is a stark contrast to all the positivity. Even really coming into the year, despite some of the concerns, there was a belief. Even if we exclude the best team in Astros history, that particular commentary from someone at the station, there was still
got time to be right. By the way,
I don't even know what the context is of that. What do they have to accomplish to reach that goal? Since they've already won two World Series, sweep through the playoffs. Does that make them the best team in Astros history?
Win like 109 games. However, one plus however many 2019 won.
I don't think they're going to get there, Sean.
What?
I don't think they're going to get there.
It's still mathematically possible.
Yeah, it's mathematically possible they never win another baseball game again. That's how that stuff works.
They can still go like 90-10 or whatever.
Yeah. Good luck. Go play 900 baseball the rest of the way. See, yeah. Then everyone who thought this team would be really good would be clearly right.
What if they just started doing that? Man.
How do you
wouldn't
think
that be awesome? If
they just became the hottest team to ever play baseball, sure.
If they just played like the 0-1 Mariners for the rest of the year.
That'd be great. And
maybe
then
win the division.
And then close it out by winning the World Series, something the Mariners could not do. Sure.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Man.
I don't have high hopes.
Can they sign Ken Griffey Jr.?
This version? The one who walks around today?
65-year-old Ken Griffey Jr.
You mean like backwards 20, hat 20, wearing Ken Griffey?
Yeah.
One of the prettiest swings of all time, and one of the only baseball players that made me want to be a baseball player, Ken Griffey Jr. That guy, maybe the coolest baseball player of all time.
Wow. Yeah.
Can you think
for
of
me that was Morgan Insberg? No, I just want to name an old. Just want to name an old Astros.
That ain't an example of two Americas. I don't know if you'll be able to
Chris
find
Burke,
one.
Okay,
Chris Burke. Well, he did have a big hit that one time in the playoffs.
That one, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying that one time because I can't remember another time where Chris Burke was responsible for anything as great as that particular moment against what was it, against the Braves.
Yes.
In the ALDS. 18th inning. See, we're doing it now too. That team didn't even win a World Series. And we're reliving moments.
It's especially sad to go back to the, like, man, remember the good old days of 2 years ago?
Yeah, you can't really put 2 years ago into the good old days criteria.
I don't think I can be like, man, Trey Mancini was a problem.
He made a big play. Remember that play he made, Sean?
I do remember that play, man. People forget.
Yeah. Everyone trashed Trey Mancini because
they won the trade
because he couldn't hit the baseball very much after like his first week, but made that play. Yeah. We will remember him for that. There is wide receiver news in the NFL, and after the news broke, a lot of Texans fans are talking about how good the Nico Collins deal looks in retrospect. I'll give you that news and some commentary on what it might mean going forward, because did the Texans get a steal or did somebody just get paid because they've done a lot more than Nico Collins? We'll talk about that when we come back. Welcome back to the show. The big news for the Texans in the last couple of days was Nico Collins signing his extension. We did a whole thing about why he needed to take a picture in the bowels of NRG. And the next receiver off the board as far as contract talks is Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle gets a 3-year, $84.7 million extension. $76 million guaranteed. More than Nico Collins, obviously. Nico Collins, his average per year is right around $24 million. So Jalen Waddle gets more than that. And I saw, you know, different Texans accounts going, woof, credit to Nick Caserio. He keeps winning. He keeps making the smart moves. There's some context here. Nico, and I think he decided, you know what, I'll take the money right now as opposed to letting this play out for a year and then maybe costing more and being more expensive for the Texans. Nico's done it for 1 year. I think that's the difference. Beyond the fact that Jalen Waddle is a first-round pick, don't know how much that means this late into their careers when we're talking about big money extensions, but Jalen Waddle's done it since he began. He's over the last three seasons, nearly 34,000 yards, excuse me, 3,400 yards, excuse me, 20 total touchdowns, broke the rookie record for receptions, all these things that would let you know that he has been a consistent performer. That is why he got more money than Nico, not because Nico Collins, not because Nick Caserio is so bright, not because he's working his magic. He has, I guess in music terms, a one-year wonder on his hands, who he decided to invest in because there's a belief that Nico Collins will be good again, and then it's going to be more expensive. But it isn't about Nick Caserio being smart. It's about the fact that some guys have done it longer and have been more productive. And you know what's going to happen? When Ja'Marr Chase's deal comes up, he's probably going to make more than Jalen Waddle, partly because he's just next in line. And the Bengals are going to, and Ja'Marr Chase is going to lean into, I'm the best receiver from that rookie class. We have had great success when I've been on the field and Joe Burrow's been on the field. So give me more money than the guy who's drafted behind me and has had less team success than I have. That's just kind of how it works. We can credit Nick Caserio for plenty of things, but he wasn't the brilliant strategist that got Nico Collins under a number that he should have gotten. Nico's done it for a year. And if he had done it for the first couple years before last year, he would be getting paid like Jalen Waddle's getting paid. Hey, it's millionaires making more millions, so it doesn't really matter that much. But hey, the wide receiver market is beyond the quarterback market. It is the one of the richest positions in all of football. You can probably throw in left tackle too. But not a lot of those guys come up for deals. They're there are far more great wide receivers right now in the league than there are left tackles. Sometimes tackles just get paid because it's hard to find them. Wide receivers right now, it's not hard to find them. We know Nico Collins was a fourth round pick, and he has made good on the Texans' investment, and really the hard work he's put in has led to the recent deal he got. So you look at the other guys who are next beyond Jamar Chase, his own teammate T. Higgins, a couple guys who aren't going to OTAs. Jalen Waddle wasn't one of those guys. I guess he felt the deal was coming. He didn't have to put any pressure on the Dolphins. And then Justin Jefferson, he's the guy that is quietly the one that maybe you should, if you're not, that you'd be concerned, but the one to be on the lookout for. Whether he'll get traded, I feel like that's unlikely, but he's probably going to break the $30-plus million barrier. He is in line to be the top-paid wide receiver in football, and the Vikings have to ask, is that something we want to do when we have a young quarterback? I mean, it's not O'Connell, is it? That's his name, his last name? The Vikings head coach, I don't know why I'm blanking on that.
O'Connell.
Right now. O'Connell, okay. KOC, you're right. He's not in a position where he can just throw away a year. And Justin Jefferson would certainly help his cause along with Jordan Addison. That would help a young quarterback if it's going to be J.J. McCarthy. But I wonder where the Vikings are in terms of we are maybe doing a soft reset, and possibly the soft reset doesn't involve paying a wide receiver $30-plus million a year. I would advise against it. It's not hard to find good wide receivers, but Justin Jefferson is the best in the game, at least in my eyes. So that is a discussion for the Vikings. But I think more than anything, it's less about what Nico Collins got and maybe what Stephon Diggs may get if he performs really well this year. Now you're going to start seeing where he's going to look at his potential next contract and see, where do I fall in? Do I fall in above the younger player that has accomplished less, like Jalen Waddle and obviously Nico Collins? Or am I too old to be demanding the 3-year, $90 million extension somewhere along the lines of what Justin Jefferson might get if the Vikings decide to pay up? So just keep an eye on that as you're looking at Stephon Diggs and his season, because he's not going to look at these wide receiver numbers and go, I should be making less than that guy, which may lead to Stephon Diggs no longer being a Texan. Hey, but that's months down the line. If we're having that discussion, if that's actually a problem, it's a good problem to have, because that means he's been really, really good this year. We do have the conference finals back, because the Wolves and the Mavericks are back at it after a day off. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And if you want to bet on that game tonight, if you feel good about the Wolves, go to mybookie.ag. They have experts that'll help you and walk you through the NBA playoffs. There are not a lot of games to go, but there are still chances to make money. So you go to mybookie for that. And if you are into the playoffs in another sport, the hockey playoffs are going on. You've got two great series in the Stanley Cup Conference Finals. The Oilers tied it up last night. You got Rangers and Panthers. Maybe you think the Panthers, after their OT win, are going to take the Rangers down in Game 5 in New York. You can find your way to MyBookie, and the experts will help you take care of that as well. If you are not a sports gambler and you just like cards, MyBookie has you. They got you. The live dealer will deal those cards to you if you like to be at the table and you like to play blackjack or poker or any other card game. MyBookie takes care of you. You got the sports gambling. You got the card games. MyBookie is the place for you. That's why the slogan matters. Bet on anything, anywhere, anytime. And if you are a new customer, bet 975 is the promo code, and you get a bonus. You get a bonus with your sign up. And if you're an existing customer, that promo code gets you a bonus as well. Your first deposit bonus can be up to $1,000. They want you to win. They want your money to go further than you think it might. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. Bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
We'll get to the Western Conference Finals here in a second. Sean, have you ever, I mean, we work in media, so it's probably a different question for us, but have you, because we see people we know on TV, it happens. I mean, you went to Texas. I'm sure there's some people that you were in class with that have gone on to
great things.
Be on television, radio, whatever, have jobs in media. So it's not such a big deal when it happens to us, I guess. But have you ever seen someone you know from them serving you food wind up on a commercial? Like, you know, Chick-fil-A does a thing where they have real employees do their commercials.
Oh, I always assumed those were paid real actors. In air quotes, but I guess they're real.
I've never
noticed that. Hey, that guy gave me my 12 count.
Well, my nugs. Chipotle is running an ad on Twitter, and they've ran these on TV before, where Christina from Webster, she used to serve me double chicken. She used to serve me the double chicken in my chicken bowl.
Wow, that's huge.
And now she's been in these commercials before, but there's an ad right now on Twitter that I've just paused at because her face pops up. And I'm like, I know. Hey, I got – how many burritos have you made for me over the course of the last 5 or 6 years?
900.
Probably. Yeah. Well, when Chipotle still had it. Now Chipotle's kind of, you know.
Whoa. Wash King?
Look.
Games passed them by?
They have –
They have no freezers. I don't know if Christina probably actually mentions that in the
This is only an 11-second ad. I'm not sure if she can get to the no freezer stuff. It does mention a lot of the fresh food stuff, yeah, so fresh. maybe she does mention no freezers. But I remember when she was just on the line. She wasn't a manager. She was working towards it. I remember who you were before you are who you are now, Christina. Christina from Webster, Texas. Shout out to her. I'm like, wait a minute. She's every time I see a Chipotle commercial, I remember this is the woman who made sure I had the right amount of rice in my burrito.
Do you order? Oh, well, you don't go that often.
Not as often that I would have 900 of them, but sure, I went last week.
Okay, do you order on the app or do you still go in line the old fashioned?
Do they have an? I used to, but they didn't have the option for double, like, extra rice from what I remember on the app. Maybe they did, but I didn't trust them that they would fulfill that order. You have the app, so you're looking for it right now.
Yeah, I'll look for it because I mean I just get the normal amount of rice.
Yeah.
Burrito. I'm actually ordering it right now.
Oh, look at that.
Or not ordering it, but
I'm just going through the process.
Yeah, you can get extra rice.
Okay, I don't remember. Maybe I just didn't trust that I would get my extra rice.
That's probably,
if I wasn't a face-to-face interaction.
That's probably a safe bet that they'll. I mean, because you've heard of the hack.
Where you film them?
Well, that's the new one that you film.
Oh, the hack isn't the hack where you get a normal amount of rice and then go back. Oh, wait a minute, can I have some more?
Yes, that's the hack. Or people do it with the steak or the chicken a lot, where they. Yeah, I'll get chicken. They'll plop it in there. Actually, make it double, and so now
it's two.
Because when they do double, a lot of times, or what people think that happens, I don't know if there's any scientific method that goes behind this, is that when they know it's a double, they go lighter scoops for the two scoops. If it's if they think it's a single, they go a little bit heavier, and then that's when you go actually make it a double. So now you're getting two heavy scoops.
That's probably the less invasive. No, certainly it's the less invasive hack as opposed to using your camera phone to film them to make sure they give you the right amount of food, which is
17-year-old
just crazy to me. Just leave them alone. If you just need to ask for extra, just do it. Don't film the Chipotle workers.
I've done that before. I've done actually with rice where I feel like they didn't give me enough rice. I'm like, can you give me a little bit more rice, please?
Yeah, that's fine.
Guess what? They do it.
Yeah, they'll do it. It's not that big of a deal. They're not out to get you. Unless you're an annoying customer and they remember you, I'm sure that has happened where they're like, I'm going to screw this person
over.
And
I'm guessing
if
you're an annoying customer, the chances that you're going to pull out your phone and record them making the burrito goes up. Chances are you're an annoying person if you do that.
Yeah, not everyone's like Christina from Webster who loves Chipotle and wants to be in the commercials. So some people don't look at it as this is my last stop. So they don't want to be in that black hat and black collared shirt and the jeans and whatever uniform they make them wear. They're just looking to do their time, work their way through school or whatever. It's not everybody. I'm just saying it's a part-time food food restaurant jobs, so we know the deal. Don't film them. They probably aren't at their best. They're out there working. Just leave them alone and just ask for more. Get your camera out of their face.
I don't even because I do the app, so I just walk in.
Yeah, and say, hey, and they got your order
Sean,
ready.
I point at my face.
Yeah.
You know, from 97.5, and they go, yep, got it.
Yep. We remember you, Sean.
Loved you today.
Appreciate
talking
it.
About the Astros.
Yeah. I mean, for the five minutes where you weren't talking about the Astros, it was great. The other times I was depressed because the Astros stink right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I remember watching Morgan Insberg, too.
Yeah, what a great pull on your part. And that Chris Berg thing, we liked it, too. The good old days.
Looking forward to that when I have a Chipotle. Oh, well, I used to go to Chipotle way more often because I would get it for lunch.
Sure.
When the show ended, when I stopped at 12.
Yeah.
And now at 3, it's a little late to be having lunch, so I have a lot less now.
But hey.
So they might not recognize me when I go.
They might have forgotten out about you, but I am happy that the Christina I knew from like 7 years ago is now like a star. Is in those TV ads quite a bit, and she's been in them for like a couple years now. I don't like where this is going. Where Tongue Dark Chris has comments on Christina from Webster, that would suggest.
Come on, maybe he also is in. Webster.
It's true. He might be from the area. We got an former intern that you typed the name on the same line that the call was made.
We're
working through stuff. Yeah, we're working through stuff here as the interns.
It's still preseason, aren't
Yeah,
you?
It's only their second day. Understood. But if you're out there and you're listening, all you got to do is click on the line where there's two calls. So maybe that's where that comes from. I don't know who's on line 4. We'll get to line 1, which appears to be Tongue Dark Chris. He wants to talk about Christina and Webster. The intern, Tongue Dark Chris is still on line 4. We're working through things here. As Sean said, it's still the preseason. What's up, Chris?
Hello, guys. Hello, Dell. Shout out to the intern. He was a little confused when I was telling him my name, but
yeah, he has
all good.
He has you as Tom Dark Chris up there on the board.
good stuff. But hey, man, you know what? A little nerve wracking, but you talking about Christina from Webster, man, brings back so many good memories, like when I used to work out all the time and go through the line and a little bit of, you know, might be a little rude, but a little bit of eye candy. And then she used to throw curveballs when she would start speaking Spanish and, like, ordering all the people around to, like Borat almost, like, you do this, you do that, and all that jazz. But
so you know her. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Okay.
Like, it was odd going to the movies and seeing a Chipotle commercial and her face pops up.
That happened too. The last movie I was at, the Chipotle commercial came up and like she's like 10 minutes away. The movie theater is like 10 minutes away from the Chipotle.
So yeah, but no, I also wanted to comment on Bagwell. I tried to call in yesterday, but like the famous movie quote, like, you either die a hero, live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Is that Bagwell now?
I mean, if this season doesn't turn around and he's going to have the Abreu thing, the Montero thing's kind of turned around, so he's not going to have that hanging on him. But, yeah, and if he's looked at as part of the reason the Astros aren't operating in the way they used to, and this season is the culmination of all those wrong decisions, yes. We talked about this before on the show. Legends should never go back and be someone who's trying to be influential in the process of building the team. Just be the ambassador. Put on if you're a Hall of Famer, put on the jacket. Get inducted into the team's Hall of Fame. All the things that come with being a great player, but never come back and try to help run the team. It rarely goes well, and then people are not remembering who you were as a player. They're remembering the guy who they will say ruined their team.
Oh yeah, and so as a person that's a representative of the light-skinned delegation, and we typically say stuff that's out of pocket, I'll end with this: Bagwell a hoe, and he gotta go.
Okay. I don't know if that'll catch on, but the Bagwell Biggio, that duo, great as teammates, you know, outside of all that playoff stuff, particularly early in their careers, but
Chris Berg bailed him out.
Hey, speaking of heroes,
yeah,
Chris Berg. But it's just, why put yourself in a position where you can now be blamed for ruining something so great. I get it. The ego will tell you, you don't think you're going to be part of the problem. You think you know some things. You've been a great baseball player for years. So you come in with your own ideas and think this is going to work. It has not worked. And now, outside of being erased from like most of Astro fans' lore because of the popularity of the recent run, like everyone remembers Bagwell and Biggio, and there will be some who hold them in higher regard than the current guys. But for the most part, because those guys never won a title, everyone's going to talk about the 2015 through, well, we hope it goes beyond 2024, but this last run of Astros players are going to be held in higher esteem than those guys because these guys completed the deal. They won at the highest level. They got beyond getting to AOS titles, and we know the Bagwell and Biggio certainly were in a World Series and got to and won the NL. These guys won two trophies. They're going to surpass them in legacy. Now you might be remembered more, particularly Bagwell. Biggio, we don't even see him. I know Reggie Jackson mentioned him, but no one else really does. But Bagwell's going to be the one. If he is Jim Crane's right hand, his legacy won't be ruined. But there will be an addendum about, oh yeah, he ran the Astros into the ground too.
Do you think there's a hierarchy in the fellowship amid? Because it all...
Well, Jim Crane is Gandalf, right?
I'm not going to stand here and defend Jeff Bagwell and be the defense for Jeff Bagwell. But he really gets pinned with all of it. As far as the non-Crane, Espada, Dana group... He like, we don't talk about like, whoa, Reggie Jackson wants to make this thing happen or Craig Biggio wants to make this thing happen. It's always Bagwell. So is Bagwell, like, does that come from any?
There's a belief that Bagwell is the guy and the reason why Abreu is here.
Abreu is his guy, so he has to wear it.
He's
the poster child of this going wrong, where we don't have a specific move to pin on Biggio or Reggie?
No. All we know about Reggie Jackson is that allegedly he was going to work with Pena in this offseason. Allegedly. Yeah, and if you want to give him the credit for that or
all the credit.
Actually, the guys who wear the uniforms who are paid to help Pena get better.
Mr. October.
I know all the nicknames. I know that's what he's called.
Pena might have took that nickname from
him. Certainly for the Astros. He was Mr. October in 2022. So, yeah, Bagwell's going to wear it. He's the one at the forefront, and it's unfortunate for him that if it's just the one move that he can wear, it's the biggest misstep in the last couple of years. Because the Montero thing's kind of working out now. So you can't really put that on around his neck.
It's not a great use of your money, but he didn't get sent to Florida work on things.
He's not an abomination.
Yeah.
He's not the guy everyone's sighing and yelling at the TV when this guy comes up to at bat or when they know he's going to be in the lineup. And we know he went down there to work with him. That's his personal project. So Daryl Morey invested in James Harden. Jeff Bagwell has invested in Jose Abreu. Daryl Morey had far more success. Obviously didn't win the big one. And Abreu had that one series against the Twins.
If you wanted to be super unfair, you could keep naming, like, you know, Rafael Stone also invested in Kevin Porter Jr. Just make Daryl Morey look like Jesus.
Compared to the rest of all the other decision makers in town.
Jeff Luno invested in Roberto Osuna.
Yeah, but then Luno has a lot of wins, though.
Yeah, he has the rest of the team.
All of the wins. Yeah. He's got that one, and it was a bad one. It's the one.
Yeah.
And the rest of it has been the foundation of great Astros baseball over the last decade.
I think that's a fair trade.
Yeah. I mean, we wish you hadn't have done it, but hey, we all make mistakes. And that was a big one. We were going to get to the NBA. We'll get to that. We'll also get to SEC Media Days. The coaches are speaking. The ADs are speaking. And Chris Del Conte was sitting at a table with Joe Castiglione, the AD for Oklahoma, with Paul Feinbaum talking about the rivalry between Texas and Oklahoma and how it compares to the rest of college football, and particularly the SEC. And he said some things that will get SEC people upset because these are the new guys in town. But I don't think he's very wrong. We'll get to that at some point as well, probably in the second hour of the show. We got a couple minutes to go in the first hour. We'll be back. We'll be back.
ESPN. 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Stephon Diggs is on the field for Texans OTAs. So if you had any worries about where your big acquisition was going to be, because he wasn't around the last time the Texans were on the field, don't worry about it. He's out there. He's out there practicing. People are already talking about the connection between him and CJ Stroud because all that gets proven in 7-on-7s, obviously. What does it mean for the Texans when you have two accomplished players, and CJ certainly has only done it for the year, but establishing a connection in 7-on-7, it's just an empty caption for Twitter. What connection is being established? No one is actually worried about those two
timing
not being on the same page.
Yeah, it's timing.
No.
Oh, this is how Diggs gets out of his route, and that's when I should throw.
Yes. No one other than people who are looking for engagement particularly care about their connection in 7-on-7s. Is there really any concern that they're not going to be on the same page?
I mean, a little bit.
You actually have concerns?
Well, not. On the field, but the Stephon Diggs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, potentially
on the sidelines.
Okay, that's always the overarching thing with Stephon Diggs.
But I get what you're saying. I don't think that it's going to be a situation where it's like, nope, they just don't mesh. They don't fit.
When's the last time a good quarterback just couldn't get on the same page with a new wide receiver? A good wide receiver who came in?
Devontae Adams and Derek Carr.
He wasn't Aaron Rodgers, but Devontae Adams still got his. They all still get theirs.
It was more of a Derek Carr problem.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yeah. Devontae got his with the Raiders. They all do. They were both young guys. They weren't even established at that time. Jared Goff would say, I didn't need Cooper Kupp. Look what I did for Ross St. Brown.
Yeah. Adam Thielen and Bryce Young.
Well, Adam Thielen had a good year. He was the only productive member of that Panthers offense.
Tua and Devontae Parker.
Devontae Parker was not long for being a good football player when Tua took over. The question, obviously, was Tua and Tyreek. How could Tyreek possibly work out with Tua?
He underthrew him that one time.
Yeah, he was wearing a bucket hat in training camp and underthrew him. And people were like, see, we were right. And then Tyreek has his two most productive years. Because those guys get theirs. If the quarterback is at a minimum competent, minimally competent, and the coordinator can, design a couple plays, and I'm being a little facetious with that, The star receivers are going to get theirs. They'll yell like only Andre Johnson had to deal with, DeAndre Hopkins too, had to deal with the likes of like Brian Hoyer. But those aren't good quarterbacks. When a star receiver has to deal with a quarterback of that stature, then sure. You can question whether they're going to get on the same page and whether that receiver will thrive.
Will Tom Savage be able to give the ball to DeAndre Hopkins?
That's not going to work out because it's Tom Savage. But you find DeAndre a competent wide receiver while he was in this – competent quarterback while he was in his prime, and things are going to work out. The same will be here. The question will be, how productive can Stephon Diggs be, and has he lost a step? But the questions about the connection and will they be on the same page, no worries there.
Also, you don't want him to lose a step, but with Nico Collins and Tank Dell already on the same field as him and Dalton Schultz, he could lose a step, and it not super matter for the Texans. Like, it just wouldn't matter much.
His lost step or that Hutchinson guy. Who do you want on the field? Stephon Diggs with a half a step gone or Noah Brown?
Or it's like, oh, no, now he has to be the third receiver. Now Nico Collins and Tank Dell are the 1 and 2, just like how they were last year for at least when Tank Dell was healthy.
Yeah,
and the offense, the passing offense, mostly fine.
Mostly fine. There's some games, well, the Jets game in particular, but what Tank too. Was gone. The Tampa game was great.
Yeah. Love the Tampa game.
We love it.
Let's do more of that this season.
You want to play the Tampa Bay Bucks 17 times and see how it goes? Let's play Tampa-like defenses 17 times this year.
Anytime they're down 3 with 14 seconds left, just win that game. No, it was 40 seconds left. Win that game. They should do that as often as they can.
Or, you know, not be down 3 to a middling team.
A playoff team.
It's true.
Division winner. Two division winners. That might have been the game of the year.
NFC South. Relax.
And AFC South.
Yeah. Relax on both accounts. But the Texans, at least this year, PFF thinks they have a really good roster. I'll tell you about that when we come back. The Texans, the hype continues. I'm sure Stephon Diggs will get open several times in today's session, and people will talk about how great those two look together. It'll only lead to more excitement. I'll tell you about where the Texans rank according to PFF as far as their overall roster and give you some of the strengths and what PFF thinks are the weaknesses. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.